10 people with leprosy came before Jesus just off the main road between Galilee and Jerusalem. And when he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And as they walked, they could not help but see that they were made clean, except for one. He was on his own, healed from leprosy, but not from the effects of prejudice. And without the other nine, where would he go? To whom could he turn?
That's the Reverend Dr. Paul Telstrom. I'm Peter Wallace, and this is a new day of faith and hope. This is Day One.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's mainline Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Now, to introduce this week's preacher, here's our host, Peter Wallace.
Thanks, Sherry. We're delighted to welcome back to Day One the Reverend Dr. Paul Telstrom, who was with us 12 weeks ago. Paul is the senior pastor of Irvine United Congregational Church, UCC, in Irvine, California, where he has been for 10 years. He earlier served as pastor of Mount Hollywood Congregational Church in Los Angeles. Paul is a graduate of Syracuse University and earned his Master of Divinity degree from Claremont School of Theology, where he was given the Distinguished Preaching Award, and his Doctor of Ministry degree from Chicago Theological Seminary. Paul, thanks for being with us again.
Thanks for having me back. I look forward to it.
You were last with us in July, and you introduced your church to us, but remind us about what Irvine United Congregational Church is all about.
We are an open and affirming, just peace, global mission church of the United Church of Christ. We were a new church start in 1979, and being planted in Orange County, in the particular place we are, the church just took off. It had a visionary leader named Fred Plummer, who heads the Center for Progressive Christianity. And after he left, they decided to just move forward in faith and hire a full-time pastor, even though they just lost their largest tenant at the time. Mm-hmm. And the church has attracted all kinds of folks from many different traditions. And today it is the progressive voice of Irvine.
So being a beacon of progressive faith in that Southern California suburb, how challenging of a calling has that been to be there?
Well, of course, there's the challenge and growing pains along mm-hmm. the way and you know, goodness knows, trying to create new buildings at this mm-hmm. point to replace a worn-out campus. That's a challenge. But on the whole, I think it's really been a blessing. It's been something that people dearly wanted to have. Mm-hmm. These are folks, it's kind of a university church. They're mm-hmm. folks who work in several of our colleges and universities around us who are always interested in knowing and learning more. So we're kind of an educational spot as well. We mm-hmm. have classes going on all the time from retired pastors and myself. And it's also a place where we stand up for what we believe mm-hmm. To be just. So it attracts a whole bunch of people.
For 11 years before coming to Irvine, you were a board member of HopeNet, an interfaith agency in Los Angeles. You served as its president for the last 3 years there. Tell us about that organization and your work with it.
I miss them, and I wish them well, and I hope people look them up and give them some money. They're a great organization. They were a brainchild of someone from our Wilshire Boulevard temple. I remember. I think he was the man who helped start this. And it was an interfaith effort. Mm-hmm. It was a way of getting all of our churches up and down the Wilshire corridor in mm-hmm. Los Angeles together to do something about hunger and homelessness. And so they started a couple food pantries that's grown to, I think there's at least 12 to 14 now. I've been away for a while. Mm-hmm. They built a low-cost housing unit, just a remarkable thing to do. They did feeding programs as well, so there were lunches going on. And a couple of the food pantries have little thrift shops in them, mm-hmm. places where you can go and get something if you need to dress up for an interview, something like that. So these have been going on now for maybe 30 years at this mm-hmm. point and have attracted more of the churches in the area. And we're now multi-faith. It started as an ecumenical effort. And to this day, it just really serves the Los Angeles-Wilshire area.
How did the multi-faith approach make that a more effective ministry?
I think that we all have friends who are Jewish, Muslim, mm-hmm. Buddhist, mm-hmm. Christian, Catholic. And it was a way of getting folks together, because a lot of it, of course, was fundraising, to get folks together to make sure that they operate. Another level was to get people together from different backgrounds to make sure that the food pantries themselves are in operation every day that they're supposed to be, and of just calling people together up and down the corridor. So it's been a tremendous outreach.
Preaching is very important to you as a pastor. In fact, you attended this year's Festival of Homiletics. Is the art of preaching changing in today's culture, do you think?
When I started out, I was told that you never talked about yourself. And that was easy for me then. I wanted to keep it to the topic that I had prepared. I wanted to exegete the passage. I wanted to bring a good word with keeping myself outside of it. I have noticed over time that people really want to know something about that person who's standing up there and talking. What are her struggles? What is he going through? How does his life get touched by this particular scriptural passage? And so I guess in a way, my preaching has changed in that I'm a little more willing to say, hey, everybody, I struggle with this too. And I noticed that I did that in the sermon today, just a little bit. And that has become more of a style for me now.
Well, Paul, your sermon today is based on the story of an encounter Jesus had with 10 lepers in Luke chapter 17. Would you read it for us?
Sure. On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus was going through the region between Samaria and Galilee. As he entered a village, 10 lepers approached him. Keeping their distance, they called out, saying, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And when he saw them, he said to them, go and show yourselves to the priests. And as they went, they were made clean. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice. He prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. And then Jesus asked, were not 10 made clean, but the other 9, where are they? Was none of them found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner? Then he said to him, get up and go on your way. Your faith has made you well.
Well, Paul, we look forward to hearing your sermon today. It's entitled, All He Has. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. The account is short, and it brings us a reminder of life in the pre-scientific world. As he entered a village, 10 lepers approached him. Keeping their distance, they called out, saying, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. For centuries, there were people who were afflicted with all sorts of diseases and conditions that today, with gratitude to the scientific and medical community, no one ever need fear again. The drama that unfolds today is confirmation of the strength of fear. Here are 10 souls walking at a distance away from the main road, as they were bound to do by law because of their condition. These were people who were born with real hopes and dreams. They once walked with purpose and meaning with their peers, and now, due to the accident of being in some place or other where they contracted this disease, their lives were as good as over. Leprosy was the most feared disease, as it removed one from living one's life in community while it tore at the body, causing infection and mutilation. But these were people, real people, whose health and hopes made them beg on the fringes. No cure awaited them, and fear of contagion preceded them on their death march around civilization. Jewish law was very precise. Lepers could not come within a prescribed distance of someone who was, quote-unquote, clean. Well into the Middle Ages, people with leprosy even had to wear special clothing, shake bells, or shout the word unclean ahead of them as they walked a distance away from the main road so that they would not come into contact with the unafflicted. And here we are today with 10 people with leprosy calling out to Jesus. 10 people isolated from the families they once knew, 10 who lived with the pain of both their physical condition and the pain of ostracism from the world. Exhausted and friendless, they call out to Jesus. Now, one thing that makes the story unusual is that these lepers are traveling with a Samaritan. Not only is this man a leper, but he is outside of the circle of acceptability because of who he was born to be, someone considered not fully human, other, and therefore ineligible to be at the same table with the rest of society. His religious practice is different. His race sets him apart. He is a foreigner, an immigrant in this country. His orientation is that of someone who was born with different characteristics that make him impure even if he did not have leprosy. Maybe you can remember what it was like to discover that you did not have the same access to a rightful place at the table. Maybe it's because of your gender and the remaining glass or even stained glass ceilings that need to come down. Perhaps it's about race or status or sexual orientation. Perhaps you can remember how it felt to begin to discover that at a very early age, to see others who walked about with a sense of entitlement and your first inkling that yours was an uphill or unequal or even a dangerous walk amongst the status quo and the privileged. In some sense, this would be a walk not unlike the Samaritans, and we have to add to this that as he moved about, the word unclean filled his ears because of a disease that was most debilitating to live with and terrible to see. Well, on this particular day, these 10 people with leprosy came before Jesus from their respectable distance, walking the extremely long march just off the main road between Galilee and Jerusalem. And when he saw them, he said to them, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." And as they walked, they could not help but see that they were made clean, healed. If you can imagine, no further need to be relegated to the outside. There is nothing keeping them from taking up their lives again. And perhaps these former lepers got themselves back into a respectable-looking order, and from where Jesus stood, they set out for Jerusalem to be made ritually clean, to be accepted back into their communities. All they had to do was go back and present themselves to the priests. Except for one leper who was healed on the road, who could not turn to the accepted religious institution to present himself. Because whoever he was and wherever he was on his journey, he was not welcome here. The priests to whom the 9 other lepers went represented, after all, the religious institution that condemned the Samaritan, preached against him, reviled him, allowed him no grace, no love, and no acceptance for him whatsoever. The people were taught from childhood to demean and feel superior to the Samaritan. He was on his own, healed from leprosy, but not from the effects of prejudice. Where would he go? And without the other 9, to whom could he turn? And of course, the story tells us, then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back. Praising God with a loud voice, he prostrated himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Have you ever looked at someone or heard them speak or perhaps seen them involved selflessly in some community or even family healing situation and recognized that you were in the presence of someone who was truly authentic? And in those thin places when we stand on the threshold between the commonplace and the genuine, can you feel what it is like to truly recognize the presence of the authentic voice that rises above the nattering? Some instinct caused this man to turn back because he knew that there at the feet of this man, this Jesus, he was in the presence of the authentic. And Jesus asked, "Were not 10 made clean, but the other 9, where are they? Was there no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" Well, the others were on their way back home, and as they should have been. Imagine the joy of being suddenly made whole again, of being able to go to a place called home again. They were becoming re-enmeshed with community, family, with friends in the center of society, their faith, tradition. Perhaps they thought they had found what was authentic there. You can't really blame them. Why didn't they return and give thanks? Well, probably for the same reasons we give, for not taking the time to give thanks where it is due. It was this one outsider who, perhaps because circumstances forced him to question more, to be more discerning, turned back and found himself in the only authentic presence he could know. And it was there that Jesus said to him, "Get up, go on your way. Your faith has made you whole." Aesop once said, "Gratitude is the sign of noble souls." All this noble soul really has is the authentic Jesus. He doesn't have priests there to present offerings to be declared clean. He would not be welcome in Jerusalem. He has no reason to turn anywhere but towards the presence of Jesus and the healing words that made him whole. All he has is Jesus. He doesn't have a hometown or supportive community. He's on the outside. Theologian Karl Barth said that the basic human response to God is gratitude, not fear and trembling, not guilt and dread, but thanksgiving. Gratefulness. To have faith is to live faith, and to live faith is to give thanks. Living into a real life of gratitude is to live a life of faith. This was the leper made whole who returned in gratitude, even in when so many settings he is made other. Now, we could talk today about how any number of people might relate to the Samaritan, this person outside of the lines. In this never-ending political season, the shunned Samaritan shows up over and over again. We might be able to find this foreigner characterized as the Syrian refugee of whom we should be wary. He could be a young African-American man who simply went out to the store and got shot and killed, whose parents would never hold him close again because racism still lies restlessly unexamined beneath cover of privilege. He might be the one outside of an acceptable faith, quote-unquote, and he might be hearing of a ban, temporary or otherwise, on people like him. She could be a woman whose access to women's health care needs might be abridged. He or she might be threatened with a prejudice masked as religious freedom that makes it okay to bully a small percentage of our people. She might be the Samaritan who is forced to carry a birth certificate in order to use a restroom that matches her birth gender. He could be one of the 4,000 LGBT youth who live on the streets of Los Angeles because they have fled or have been kicked out of their homes, and many turn to suicide. Oh, there are Samaritans of many kinds in our midst indeed this year. Will we go on treating them the same way, or will this be the year we change? Preacher Dan Fromansky writes, "While schoolyard bullies should be held accountable for their actions, we need to look at the root, not the bloom, of the problem. We cannot stand on the side of love if we relegate ourselves to the sidelines, afraid to insult people of faith who are enablers of the abuse that far too many LGBT people endure. Religious leaders must be challenged to agree that publicly breaking down the spirit of vulnerable young people, setting the table for their despair, isolation, and demise, is a perversion of God's love." Like the people struck with leprosy in this encounter with Jesus, no one should have to dwell in fear on the outskirts of society. How do we turn our feelings of anger and sadness into concrete practices of faith and justice? Where is that which feels authentic for us? Someone once said that whenever we draw a line in the sand to exclude others, we find that Jesus is always standing with those on the other side of the line. There was once a certain leper who was sent ahead with the others to show himself to the priests. But this one Samaritan turned back. Well, I think the reason he turned back was simply because he had to. Human societies have had a poor track record of showing kindness to those on the margins. It was true in Jesus' time, and it is certainly true of us, just listening to the rhetoric of this present campaign season here at home. Maybe something told that Samaritan to go back to the source, the real healer, historic foundation, that teacher, leader, and guide, because all that man had was Jesus. And that's all we really have today in order to be followers. Many people feel, and rightly so, that they're on the other side looking in through stained glass windows that only cut and hide the light. If you show yourself to the priest and he tells you that women can't be equal leaders with men, you've got to turn away, go back down the road to find the source of what is authentic and real. All you have is Jesus, the teaching, healing presence who spoke with women and who loved inclusively. And like the Samaritan, if we find ourselves visiting or perhaps growing up in congregations that don't welcome us because of who we are, then we have to shake the dust from our feet, walk back on down the road to find that source of what is truly authentic. And this is the voice of justice and peace. It is the presence of love and acceptance. It is the spirit of hospitality and welcome given to the Samaritan or whoever the undocumented visitor might be. And where this is not found, that's when we know that Jesus has left the building. We don't have to go back to such places to be made ritually clean or sanctified or born again. All the Samaritan had was Jesus. And Jesus tells the Samaritan that his own faith has made him whole. Our own faith, as we understand it, how it proves itself in its own authenticity, how it enriches our lives and makes us more open and loving people, authentic, simple, unadorned, free. Gratitude. Whoever we are, wherever we are, imperfect, often broken and hurting, caught up in a net of our own dishonesties and resentments, yet still somehow capable of showing ourselves in soaring moments of authenticity, desiring to be loving and strong exactly as who we were born to be in order to live our lives. Here is our own faith as we understand it, as we walk to the places in our hearts where we find the authentic shining before us. Yes, our own faith makes us whole in spite of who we are, still creatures of liminality, standing on dissolving boundaries and ready to move across the limits of what we were into what we are to be. And grace is the gift. Like the Samaritan, let's remember to return and give thanks. Thanks be to God. Amen.
The Reverend Paul Telstrom was our preacher for today. Paul is the senior pastor of Irvine United Congregational Church, a United Church of Christ congregation in Irvine, California. For a free transcript of his message, All He Has, call us toll-free at 1-888-411-DAY1. That's 888-411-3291. Or write to us at Day 1, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. Please keep in mind that Day 1 depends on the financial offerings of our faithful listeners. We're grateful for your support. I'm Sherry Miller. Next week, we're honored to welcome Bishop Larry Goodpastor, who earlier this year retired as Bishop of the Western North Carolina Conference of the United Methodist Church. He now serves as Bishop in Residence at Candler School of Theology at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. His sermon is entitled Unleashing the Power of Prayer. You won't want to miss it. Paul Telstrom offers some final thoughts on his sermon today with our host, Peter Wallace.
Paul, you really brought this story of the 10 lepers to life for us. Here were 10 people isolated from their families, living with the pain of their physical condition and their ostracism, exhausted and friendless, you said, and they call out to Jesus. You pointed out that we have similar sorts of people in our midst today for a variety of reasons who must deal with prejudice and fear and exclusion. How can they call out to Jesus?
I think it's a call not just to them, but to all of us to constantly be aware of making an open space at the table for everybody. And I think that those of us who, for whatever reasons, have more privilege, we need to be making sure that that happens constantly. So I also think it's a story about gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other ones went down the road. They were already healed. They didn't come back and give thanks. But that one leper did. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's a reminder to me constantly to be grateful for everything that we have, mm-hmm. no matter what has happened. And I think also just the importance of being kind. One of the things we need to do every day, because God knows these people who have been afflicted with leprosy in the passage or whatever the issue is in our world today, there is so little kindness, and it's so important for mm-hmm. us to always be ready to extend that kind word in word or in deed.
Mm-hmm. And you showed us something I hadn't realized before. The one who returned to thank Jesus was a Samaritan, so he really couldn't have gone to the Jewish religious authorities, as Jesus had told them to do. The only place he could go, you said, was back to Jesus, the only authentic presence he could know. Could you say more about what we can find in the authentic presence of Jesus ourselves?
We're looking for authenticity in our lives. We're looking for authenticity in our faith tradition. And we have this central figure, this Jesus. And for me, I wonder sometimes what people read when they read about Jesus or hear. Because for me, if your faith makes you more judgmental or more narrow, what does that say about your understanding of who Jesus Christ was? Or if your faith makes you more expansive, more willing to open up and give, what does that say about this central figure? So the proof to me is in understanding a gospel that lives and breathes and brings upon us this understanding that our journey is all about making this an open table for everyone.
Paul, what's one thing from your sermon that you hope our listeners will keep in mind this week?
I think that especially in a season where we're hearing so many terrible things be said about our leaders or would-be leaders, I think their behavior is really a warning to us to be more kind mm-hmm. and to show gratitude for the many things that we really do have. I think we forget sometimes just how incredibly blessed we are and really how easy it is to say a kind word to somebody or to make sure that their path is made a little easier.
Paul Telstrom, thank you for being with us.
It was a pleasure being here. Thank you, Peter.
Day One is the voice of America's mainline Protestant churches. Visit us online at dayone.org. Our program is recorded and edited by Donald Jones and produced by Peter Wallace. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sherry Miller, wishing you all God's blessings on Day One and forever.